Die groot trek saam Dopie Nina weksdae tussen 3 en 6.
Man, ek sien al so lank uit om weer met hierdie ou te gesels. Hy is 'n legende. En as jy enigsins hou van toer deur Afrika gaan, mense help, dis wat hy doen, dag in dag uit. Hy klim in sy 4x4, hy en sy familie, hy en sy seun en die res van die crew en hulle jaag daar op in Afrika en gaan help mense met malaria en al my tipe goeders. En ons ken hom as the Greybeard of Africa. En hierdie ou was al oral, die laaste keer wat ek met hom gepraat het, het hulle die middelpunt van Afrika gaan soek. Maar hy is vandag saam met ons, hy het nou net teruggekom van 'n nuwe ekspedisie af. Sy naam is Kingsley Holgate en ek seker jy het hom al iewers gesien in 'n koerant of 'n tydskrif. Kingsley, my friend, how are you?
Good to hear your voice. It's a long time. The last time we chatted, we were going to the center point of the African continent, you'll recall.
Yes.
Heart of Africa.
Exactly. And you found the heart of Africa. I didn't think it was going to be that easy, but I mean, for somebody that's traveled Africa quite profusely, you've just got it. Just got there and it's like, here's the center, let's go.
Yeah, no, it was tough. Just the swamps up to your neck and sometimes on your stomach and crawling. And, you know, we're not used to rainforest. You know, typically South Africans, we're used to the savannas and the open bush and the Namib and the Kalahari. So that one was tough, but we made it. And, of course, have done quite a few more since then. So nice to have the opportunity to chat to you again.
Absolutely. We'll catch up on those in a little bit. But I think the most important thing that I have to ask you is, this is a calling. It's not just something that you wake up one day and be like, you know what, I'm just going to crisscross Africa all the way. And then when Africa becomes boring, I'm going to do Europe as well and all of that. Where did your love for the outdoors and traveling really start?
It's quite a common question, you know, how did all this travel and adventure start? And the best way for me to answer really is it's all about a passion, and principally a passion for Mama Africa, a passion for this continent. Absolutely chuffed that I was born under African skies, and then we can live in this on this amazing continent with, you know, music, culture, wildlife, so many languages, vistas, sceneries. So, you know, you'd need 20 lifetimes to even begin to experience it. So when people ask, how did it all begin? It began with a passion for Africa, a love for this continent. And just sort of fairly recently, we added a book to the list of books that we've scribbled, and it was called Africa, A Love Affair with a Continent. So I think that explains it. It really stems from a love affair with a continent. I was born the youngest of three boys, and my dad was a missionary teacher type with my mum, and even in those early days in an old 1946 Chev, we'd be dragged all over Southern Africa, sleeping in tents in the great outdoors. So I guess it's a passion and a love for this beautiful continent of Mama Africa.
So Kingsley, this segment is called A Day in the Life Of, and we look at people with different vocations. So you are our adventurer, a day in the life of an adventurer. So as a young boy, when you thought about what you were going to do when you grow up, was this what you saw, or were you thinking of something else?
I do recall as a young guy, you know, sitting on my father's lap, and he would entertain me with stories of the early explorers, you know, famous names like Burton Speke, Livingstone, Stanley, Joseph Thompson, all these characters that had sort of explored the great continent. And I think that was when the seed was sown that one day I would love to explore and also just love to see more of our birthplace.
Oh, wow.
So when I think of all the expeditions that you do, I don't know if you recall, there was a TV game called Tomb Raider, and she used to go all around in search of all these long-lost artifacts and that kind of thing. When I hear about your expeditions, I'm like, he must be a Tomb Raider. Is that part of what you do, or is it more of, you know, going out, experiencing the continent, experiencing the people and the cultures?
Yeah, the cultural side is hugely is hugely important to us. You know, we have a love for African culture. I know I've used the word a passion a lot, but you know, the different languages, the dance styles, the music, all the stuff that you like so much, that of course is so much the blend of Africa that obviously is a catalyst and one of the reasons we travel. But it's also about the wildlife, you know, the vistas, the sunsets, just the speciality that Africa gives. But it's also about a will to use these adventures to help others wherever possible. Because as you know so well, adventure's got a lovely energy to it. You know, it's all about the tires and the 4x4 and, you know, is it a Land Rover? Is it this? Is it that? And there's always these lovely discussions and energies around an adventure. And, of course, the campfire at night, the sparks flying off into the night sky, the sound of a Kalahari lion in the distance. But it's so lovely if you can also use these adventures, as we've been fortunate enough to do good work, so to help others and use that spirit and energy of adventures to do some good.
We're going to speak about those adventures and doing good in a little while. Just stay with us, Kingsley. We just have to go to the traffic quickly and we'll be right back with you. Kingsley Holgate, saam met ons vanmiddag op die groot trek. Dames en heren, bly net waar jy is. Die legendariese Kingsley Holgate, saam met ons via Zoom. En ek ken jou nou al 'n hele rukkie. Ek weet, as ek hom gevra het om ateljee toe te kom, dan sou hy hierso gewees het met 'n smile. Maar hy het soos gister teruggekom van een van sy expedities af. So dis hoekom ons met via Zoom. So Kingsley, before we get to that, the last expedition you did, you mentioned animals and wildlife in Africa in the previous segment. What is the situation? We know Africa is, we have problems with poaching, with dwindling animal numbers, endangered species and all of that. But when you travel through Africa, can you sense that Africa is still alive by just looking at the wildlife?
It's an interesting one, because there's stories of hope and there's stories of doom and gloom. You know, areas that were once rich in elephants, hardly an elephant left. Mm. And then in other areas, for example, in Chad, where African Parks is doing an incredible job at Zakuma National Park. It's like 1950s Africa. Not an elephant has been killed in over 5 years. They've started to breed again. And so, you know, throughout Africa, there's areas, as I say, stories of incredible hope. In Malawi, for example, the new hope for wildlife, and in Zambia. And so I don't think we should give up and feel that, it's just forget it. Everything's going to be poached. Our elephants gone. Our rhinos are gone. Because there's so many good people, good organizations that are risking their lives on a daily basis to make a difference. And I would love to go on a journey and just tell these stories of hope.
So we know you've been all over the continent. And obviously when we sit here in South Africa, we think, oh man, yeah, petrol prices, you know, the government, we struggle to get our passports and our licenses. And, you know, we have trouble with the police and there's corruption. Is that the situation all through Africa, or, is it a little bit more mellow than we think?
You know, there's obviously, different levels of corruption and different dangers in terms of personal security. But, you know, Africa is known for hardship and challenges. I mean, you know, when you cross, for example, from North Sudan on this recent journey, crossing from North Sudan to Egypt, you think we breeze through a border in an hour or half an hour, or here in South Africa, sometimes it's a mere 15 minutes. But it's to be expected that you're going to be there for 7 hours to 3 days. Difficult. Paperwork, challenges, backhanders, obstructionism. And so these are the challenges. But, you know, if you remain cool and give it a big smile, you can sort of win the day. And it certainly is one of the challenges, especially on this recent expedition, traveling during the height of COVID. All the paperwork and the duplication of paperwork and the amounts of money that people were asking for certificates. So, by the way, it's never easy. And when people ask me about Africa, I say, you know, it's all good and all bad all at the same time. And we should spend our lives searching for the good.
So what has been the baddest or the worst or the most dangerous situation that you've been in?
Well, sadly, it's invariably people, you know, young child soldiers, you know, boozed up or on drugs, and it's a sort of situation that you can't really control, and it can flare up very quickly, you know, in the old days in Sierra Leone or Liberia, in places like that. So invariably your biggest dangers come from your fellow human beings, and in warlike situations, you know, in South Sudan, where we've just been, for example, in the disputed area, 46 people killed in a village that we went through, and been, you know, in that disputed area between north and south, illegal roadblocks, demanding money, having to constantly negotiate and talk and guns up your nose, and then being arrested by the military in North Sudan, the Khartoum government, and having to talk oneself out of that. Those are some of the challenges. But you know what we found most of the time is that that feeling of Ubuntu that Africa is so well known for, it does exist. And sometimes I think it exists more strongly out of South Africa, but it does exist. You know, you can share a simple fire. You know, four or five of you can sit around a communal pot and, you know, thumb and forefinger into the pup and the remaining fish, and you can eat. And people will share with you the little that they've got. Provided that you go into this continent with a sense of understanding and of patience, you know, we always laugh when we say, you know, it might be the Swiss that developed the clock, but it's good old Mama Africa that owns the time. And the importance, you know, and the importance of keeping your sense of humor, a laugh and a chuckle and a hug go a long way to, quite frankly, sometimes to saving your life.
I think that's some good advice to people just anyway, because we are in such a hurry that sometimes we, you know, we can be so demanding on people's time, and sometimes we must just laugh and chuckle and give someone a hug. I like that.
No, you know, you just have to be chilled, I think, and that's so important anywhere you go. And, you know, on this recent journey, zigzagging all the way across Africa with our end point to be the furthest point that you can drive into in the Arctic Circle in the north of Norway, of course, you do get to a stage of your journey when you're going through the Schengen, you know, European Union countries, where it's only your GPS that tells you you've crossed the country. It doesn't even necessarily say welcome to Poland or something. Hmm. And so, you know, as an African, that's really quite a liberating feel to like cross numbers of countries without any passport control, without any customs giving you hassles and everything. So, you know, will we ever see that in Africa? I don't know. Will we ever have a chance that we cross from here to Botswana, to Namibia, to Tanzania, to Kenya on a sort of common passport? That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would absolutely. So talking about passports and traveling over countries, you've just come back from a trip where you visited 30 countries. Tell us a bit more about this trip and why you did this massive journey.
Well, it was called the Defender Transcontinental Journey, to take these new defenders all the way from Cape Agulhas, the southernmost cape of Africa, as you know so well, where the Indian Ocean and the Atlantic Oceans meet, to fill a Zulu calabash with symbolic water, to take a scroll of peace and goodwill, which we take on every journey, zigzag across Africa, face the challenges. I mean, imagine you get to Ethiopia, the war is raging. What do? You know, you can't duck through Djibouti. The only way is through South Sudan. So you have guys looking after you with a few AK-47s. I mean, intriguing country. Wonderful cattle culture. Then the problems of the disputed area between the two countries that I talked about. And then, of course, we ducked through North Sudan, finally through Egypt, all the way to the Libyan border, right to the Sahara Desert, finally to the ancient cities of Cairo and Alexandria. Then shipped the laddies over to Greece, and then continued the journey through Eastern Europe. Now, none of us, and you know, we're all South African types in the three vehicles, and none of us had been to Eastern Europe before. That was interesting. You know, after Greece, you go into North Macedonia, and the people are colorful and lovely, and then you cross to Kosovo, and all the troubles that they went through, you know, and the persecution, and, you know, in the war against Serbia, and then through Montenegro, through Serbia, onto Hungary. So all new countries for us. And then, you know, to dodge the situation in the Ukraine, because initially we were going to drive through the Ukraine, get to Moscow. We were going to meet with fellow adventurers, the Land Rover Club in Moscow, go that way through St. Petersburg. But no, we had to sort of duck around, and that took us to little countries like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and then finally to Helsinki in Finland. You cross the whole of Finland. You know that the Finnish people say they are the happiest people on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've been judged so 5 years in a row.
And did you feel that when you were there?
No.
Okay.
Straight up, no. Come to Africa if you want to see happy people. Finnish.
Thank you. I said to the one guy, I mean, they eternalized. They said, we're happy because, you know, no corruption, good governments, absolute security, wonderful education and medical. But they don't smile a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And I said to the one dude, I said, you know, we see more smiles in Zambia. We were just joking. But I think that happiness is a different type of happiness to the one we know in Africa, about spontaneity, about laughter, about practical jokes. And so forth and so on. So but through Finland, of course, we had to meet the real Father Christmas.
Oh.
You know, that's who lives in Lapland in the Arctic Circle. He was a very jolly character. And and then of course through Norway. And you know, to us as South Africans, Norway must be one of the most beautiful countries on earth. It's just, you know, the fjords, the mountains, and they have a ruling in Norway that you're allowed to camp wild wherever you find an open piece of ground. So,
oh, wow.
You know, using 4x4s, you can take a little trek and up into the forests and the top of the mountains, and you can just camp, which you need, because traveling on our South African rand in one of the most expensive countries in the world, Norway, it's the only way you can survive it is, you know, cook your own chicken at night because you're not going to eat rump steak, and camp wild. And, you know, we finally made it to the very northerly point of the Arctic Circle. I mean, we were blown apart in our alu-cab roof tents and the wind and the rain. But the pebbles that we picked from the beach at Cape Agulhas, we built a small ECP vine, a cairn of stones, at the northerly tip of Europe as a way of connecting Cape Agulhas to the northernmost point of Europe.
Oh, amazing. Kingsley, we're going to be back with you now. We just have to go to the news. I have a million questions still about this, especially about traveling on a South African passport, because
sure.
It sounds impossible. But we'll be back with you in a second. I think we should get a bumper sticker for Kingsley saying, die groot trek. Next time he does an expedition, you know, Kingsley on the groot trek, and he's off.
Yeah, we should talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great idea. Kingsley, so one of the main things I wanted to ask you is, when you guys travel, because a lot of people want to see our continent and how beautiful it is, but are you guys traveling with South African passports? Is it difficult getting around with a little green book?
Yeah, the old green book. I'm constantly amazed at just how well we can go these days on the old green mamba. You know, it's just quite incredible. And in some cases, it's actually in Africa, it's better to have the South African passport than a foreign one. Sometimes I'll be traveling with some foreigners and, you know, it's more difficult for them. So our passport is so widely accepted across Africa. I mean, you would have heard that, for example, Angola doesn't even require a visa anymore. So it is getting easier and easier. I mean, you know, North Sudan can be a bit difficult. Egypt take a bit of time. But, you know, most of the countries these days, it's an e-visa and away you go. So good luck to us. You know, from an African perspective, it's wonderful that that the South African passport is so widely accepted.
But you've seen all these places so often. Do you get there to certain border posts and they're like, oh, here's that great man again. Yeah, just let him through. He's been here before.
Yeah, that is true. And also, these days, you met him, Dupi, as my son, Ross. You
yes,
know, he's really become the expedition leader now. And he speaks several African languages. And he's great with the paperwork because, as you know, the paperwork can be tedious in some countries. We're just currently speaking to a mate who's driving an old Series 1 right across Africa, and he's been stuck at the border with the Sudan, and he's been phoning Ross, asking for advice. So, you know, the paperwork is challenging, but it's not getting more difficult. I think during COVID, however, that was a real challenge.
So you said during COVID, were you guys actively doing an expedition as the pandemic started?
Yeah, so we had to make it, you know, as a bunch of adventurers, and you would, you know, I know your sort of character, you would have loved this.
Yeah.
We said there's two things. We either can sit at home during COVID, or we can sort of get out and keep adventuring, but really use the adventure to do good. And as you know, within like a month of the pandemic, thousands of people lost their jobs, especially in tourism.
Yes.
And the wildlife sector, the conservation sector, was really badly hit, you know, lodges and game reserves and such like. So very early during COVID, we made the decision to go and help mums and kids. We used a product called Do More Nutritional Packs. It's very vitamin enriched, and each 1 kg little pack gives 10 meals. And we concentrated on mums and kids, and we were able to do over 2 million meals. So
Wow. The
whole of COVID, we were like camping in the bush up in wildlife areas. And by concentrating on wildlife areas, we were also able to deliver the message that conservation could care for you over this difficult time when it looked like you'd just been left, you know.
Mm.
The food was not getting to the people out there in those deep rural areas. It's like they'd been forgotten in some areas. And so we were able to make a difference. You know, we followed all the COVID regulations. We distributed sanitizer and face masks and followed all the protocols. But it gave COVID for us as a bunch of adventurers quite a challenge. And we then turned that into a journey. We did a thing called Mzansi Edge. A wonderful journey was to track the entire outline of South Africa. It was 16,000 kilometers with all the zigzagging. It took 80 days. And that in itself just taught us once again what an incredibly beautiful country we live in. You know, when you follow the whole outline like a ribbon, you know, you started on the interior, and you know, you go right up to the top there, you know, above the old Kalahari Transfrontier Park, Union Inn, all those aspects, you know, the Mozambique border, the Zimbabwe border, the smuggled vehicles, the stuff that was going on, you know, the booze and the cigarettes coming across from Zimbabwe. And then, you know, you follow the Botswana fence line, all peaceful. And then, of course, you follow the coast. And, you know, we tagged every single lighthouse and ended up at Cozy Bay. Started at Cozy Bay, filled the Calabash, ended at Cozy Bay again and emptied the calabash, and in that journey alone was able to do 270,000 meals to mums and kids. So, and it was an interesting period. And then we went off on this hot cape to cold cape during COVID, and those crossings into the countries north of us were a lot of paperwork and a lot of patience.
Kingsley, I want to hear a bit more about the goodwill that you guys do, but we just quickly need to go into traffic, so we'll be with you now.
Saam het ons op die lyn, avontuur hier, Kingsley Holgate. En man, dit is altyd 'n plesier om met hierdie ou te gesels, net die passie wat hy het vir die Afrika kontinent. Kingsley, you've got so many nicknames. You know, Greybeard of Africa and all of these things. Which one is your favorite?
Well, I quite like the one that the Zulus use, which is Nondwaiza. And these days, as you get a bit older, you know, they abbreviate it just to Ndwai. So, yeah, when I'm back here in KZN, as we are now, sort of I get by most of my mates, and that's simply known as Ndwai, which is Nondwaiza, which is the African Jacana, you know, the bird with the long legs and the big feet, African Jacana. So there's always a bit of humor in that name, isn't it?
Yeah, and getting back after a long trip like this, do you really enjoy, you know, a bed, a nice mattress with clean linens and a warm shower, some shampoo?
You know, we've been in roof tents for 9 months. We've got these quite spacious Alucab roof tents. You like, you pop them up like a big suitcase, and it's a nice double bed. But, you know, you have to go up the ladder, down the ladder. You know, if you need to nip out at night, it's down the ladder again and up the ladder and stuff. So, you know, after a long time, that it becomes a habit. You get so used to it. And for example, there in the north, you know, the the midnight sun. It never gets dark. So up in the Arctic Circle, you know, the wind is blowing like it, but it doesn't get dark. So you're still sitting like having a dorp and a braai at 2 a.m. around the fire because it's so light. Yeah, and then you creep up your, and then you creep up your ladder to the roof. But fortunately, the AluCab has got like a zipped awning section that closes off all the light, which is great if it's freezing cold because you do need a bit of ventilation. So you leave a little bit open, hey, and then you wake up. And you and there's like someone shining a torch in your face. It's so light. So, you know, that took a bit of, getting used to. But you know what we have learned is that we've learned to travel light.
Yes.
And sort of just roll with the pace of Africa and that. And a lot of people say to us, what's the most important thing to carry? You know, like, should it be an extra jerry can, another high lift jack, an extra this or that? And we often say that one of the most important things is an empty seat. Have an empty seat with you that you can load up a local African guy. He's got the knowledge. He's got the dialect. He knows all about the culture. And I doubt I'd be speaking to you now if it hadn't been for the empty seat philosophy, because so many times, you know, that has saved our lives by having a local African on board. And some of these guys that we met years ago still travel with us, and that was 30 years ago.
Amazing.
So that local knowledge and the empty seat, I think, is always a good philosophy in Africa. But, you know, we've learned to keep it simple, one or two grub boxes. You know, when we're not using the roof tents, we use those pop-up tents. And, you know, sometimes we can stop, have the fire lit, have the chairs up, the camp chairs around the fire, and everything ready to go in 7 to 10 minutes.
Oh,
and try and keep it absolutely simple, because, you know, you need to sort of keep on the move and enjoy your surroundings and not get too caught up with all the equipment. That's our own philosophy. I know some people travel with some really smart stuff and a lot of it, and we don't pull trailers. It's just something we've sort of decided on over the years, and we like to travel light, knowing that you don't have to carry all of pick and pay with you.
Absolutely.
You
can, so, Kingsley, what you do carry with you is, I know, malaria tents and water purification straws, and because your goodwill is so intertwined with your sense of adventure and going out there. So can you please tell us a bit, just in two or three minutes, about the goodwill that you do and the stuff that you do take to the people?
Right, I'll just breeze through it. You know, we've all had malaria. All of us on this last journey got bad malaria again. I've had malaria some 60 times. It's just what it is. It's one of the hazards of African travel. So many years ago, we started distributing bed nets, insecticide-treated mosquito nets, principally to pregnant mothers and little kids under 5 who are the most vulnerable. And nowadays, we've extended that. We have a partnership with a wonderful organization called Chow Chow Malaria, or Goodbye Malaria, who operates in southern Mozambique. One of our co-founders, and that was Robbie Brosen, the founder of Nando's, a lovely guy. And they do wonderful work. They do indoor residual spraying, like in the old days. So with a very safe insecticide, They spray the interior of villages and homes, and in certain areas of southern Mozambique, they've decreased malaria incidences by 70%.
Wow!
And they've made more than 2 million people sleep safely at night. And so we've been part of that program and the distribution of malaria nets with Vestergaard. So malaria has played a major role, not just the nets and the spraying, but also the education. You know, soccer games, all that sort of thing, to educate people that you don't have to die from the blood sucking bite of the Anopheles mosquito. Because in the time that I've been speaking to you, 20 kids would have died from malaria, if you think of it that way. And we should all try and fight that. Then the other one is one very dear to our heart, and it's called Right to Sight. And that's the provision of reading glasses to mostly elderly, poor-sighted people. You know, something we take for granted. You can't read the newspaper, and you're squinting a bit. You nip into the pharmacy and you buy a pair of readers.
Yeah.
You know, 1.25, 1.75, plus 2s, etc. So we've done about 260,000 pairs. And, you know, when now all of a sudden that old guy can read the Quran or the Bible. There's an old Maasai woman can do beadwork again. She can recognize the blue, the red, the green, and the smile of appreciation. And, you know, in 5 to 7 minutes on average, you can improve the quality of life for someone by a simple pair of reading glasses that we so take for granted. And over and above that, we have the life straws. It's like a small bicycle pump. You can wear it around your neck. Particularly good for livestock herders in really dry areas. And you guys know all about climate change and just how some areas are so struggling for water and other areas flooded. But yes, a straw like that will give the individual 1,000 liters of clean drinking water. And that together with tanks, gutters, piping, just the provision of clean, potable drinking water. So it's the right to side, it's the malaria work, it's the clean drinking water. And then another one that's very close to our hearts is community conservation education with kids. Elephant art and rhino art, which we've now taken to more than 500,000 kids, together with football games, trying to teach the next generation to care for our planet, care for our environment, and hopefully make a difference. So all those things, of course, you know, are really great fun. So
sounds amazing. I've got goosebumps. You know,
it's such good stuff to do. Nutritional gardens, helping creches, all that.
So Kingsley, I've got a choice between two questions that I can ask you, but there's one that I feel is very important. When we were off air, you said that there was one thing that you learned from this trip that you just came back from after visiting 30 countries. What was it that you learned off this trip?
Well, normally our journeys are always just within the African continent. So it's quite unusual for us to go, you know, out of Africa. And this one took us to countries we'd never been to before, particularly in Eastern Europe, because once again, the objective of the journey was to go from Hot Cape, the southernmost tip of Africa, namely Cape Agulhas, all the way to Noordkaap, the northernmost point that you can drive your landy to in the Arctic Circle. So we had to go through countries we'd never been through before, out of Africa. So, and you know, it's a big list, but you know, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, Kosovo, Serbia, Hungary, Finland, you know, in Norway. And what we did realize is that every country has got its challenges, however first world some of them might be, but they have their challenges. And the big challenge, of course, at the moment everywhere is food production. It's the shortages of food, the horrific rising prices of fuel and energy shortages because of the situation in Ukraine and such like. So, you know, we came back from this journey back to Africa. This is, we've just got back home. And instantly I'm like reassured, hey, we're not the only country out there without challenges. We've all got challenges, and we've got stuff here in South Africa and in Mama Africa that is just so special. You know, I remember going into a butchery in Norway and pricing a kg of rump steak. It came to over 1,000 rand. We went back to chicken, and you know, the cost of fuel, and we come back here, and I'm not saying I'm recognizing that things have got expensive here, and I recognize the unemployment and the huge challenges that we have, and it is really tough. But man, I know it sounds like a cliche, but if we can keep on working at helping each other and making this country beautiful, it's just wonderful to be home.
Kingsley, always a pleasure, my friend. We can't wait to speak to you again. If you are in Joburg or Pretoria, please come and pop in. It'll be great to see the old grey beard in person again. But thank you once again for just everything you and your son and the team do for our continent, for our people, and for bringing those stories back, stories of hope, stories of love for Mama Africa, as you say. And, you know, I'll never forget when you shared the calabash with me just before you went to find the center of Africa, the heart of Africa. Hopefully before your next expedition, I'll be there with you again just to share that calabash once you pick up the water this side to go dump it somewhere else again. So thank you for your time today. Send my regards to the wife and the family. And, yeah, we'll see you soon.
Lovely chatting, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Kuier Maandag tot Vrydag saam Dobie en Nina 3 tot 6 net hier op die Groot Trek op Groot FM 90.5.